This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. The Love Guru was released on DVD this week. It features the first original character created for the movies by Mike Myers since he came up with Austin Powers and all the colorful alter egos for that series of film comedies. When Mike Myers was a cast member of Saturday Night Live from 1989 to 1995, he became famous for his sketches like Wayne's World, Coffee Talk with Linda Richman, and Sprockets. In his three Austin Powers movies, he played both the swingin' super spy and his arch-rival Dr. Evil. His newest big-screen effort, The Love Guru, is built around a character he's been developing for years, Guru Pitka. Pitka has a ritzy ashram in L.A. where many celebrities come to seek enlightenment. The character is, in part, a comic tribute to Deepak Chopra, whom Myers describes as a close friend. In fact, Myers wrote the introduction to Chopra's new novel about a comic, a character who bears some similarities to Myers. Let's listen to Terry's interview with Mike Myers, recorded this summer, when The Love Guru was first released. But first, here's a scene from The Love Guru. It's a flashback. The young Pitka, who is still known by his American name Maurice, is in India, sitting at the feet of his guru, along with another young acolyte. The guru is played by Ben Kingsley.
Deepak, why do you want to join the Thuggin Maipuda ashram?
To seek my true self.
Maurice, why do you want to join?
I want to become a guru so girls will like me. Then I will like myself.
Deepak, you will enjoy love in all forms. Maurice,
you must wear this chastity belt.
Chastity belt, that sucks.
Mike Myers, welcome back to Fresh Air. It's a real pleasure to have you here. Let me start by asking you to describe the character of Guru Pitka.
Well, the character is, he's an American who was raised in an ashram in India, and he is taught a non-denominational, fictional belief system, kind of like the Force in Star Wars, called drama. And he's taught in the ways of drama by his guru, the guru Thuggin Maipuda, who is played by Sir Ben Kingsley. And he's the number two guru in the United States, number two self-help spiritualist in the United States. Number one is Deepak Chopra, and he lives in his shadow.
Now, Guru Pitka has a self-help book for every problem in the world. What are some of the titles of his books?
I Know You Are, But What Am I? Another book he has about self-talk is called Stop Hitting Yourself. Stop Hitting Yourself. And he has a book on the grieving process called What's This? A Dead One of These.
And I like, if you're happy and you know it, think again.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Did you read a lot of those books before writing the movie?
In 1991, my father passed away. Two things emerged creatively for me. One was Austin Powers. My parents are from Liverpool, England. My dad used to literally wake me up at night, even on a school night, to watch British comedies. So Austin Powers is a tribute to all the British comedies that my father made me watch, in essence. I'm glad he did. And the Guru Pitka is started as a way of dealing with that loss of, it kind of rocked my world. I didn't understand why the universe would take away the one guy I wanted to see all of this amazing success that was happening, all of my dreams, more than my dreams, because I never thought it would go this well. He died in 91, and I just started reading. I started reading things philosophical, things spiritual. And this is something I've been working on for many, many years. I wanted to have a very silly delivery system for some ideas that I actually believe in.
So you were raised in part on British comedies. You say your father used to wake you up in the middle of the night to show them to you.
He would be like, ooh, there's something really funny. And I'd be like half asleep in my Jimmy Jams. And I knew I had like a math test in the morning. He'd go, well, you can study the math test in the morning. This is really funny. It's Peter Sellers and I'm All Right, Jack, and you'll love it. And I would wake up and he'd make me a cup of tea to wake me up. He'd like, ooh, let's make some tea and watch Peter Sellers. And it's one of my happiest memories. It was an amazing bond, you know, with my father, you know.
What about James Bond films? Like, how were you first exposed to them?
Well, of course, he was British. And so my dad, you know, British people are, there's nobody more English than an Englishman who no longer lives in England. And so he lived in Canada, and his house looked like a house in Liverpool. It was like Canadian on the outside and you know, filled with, you know, brass horses and figurines and you know, pictures of Liverpool and stuff. James Bond was British. My dad loved Sean Connery. He loved Michael Caine. Michael Caine because he had a working class accent. Most actors were like, hello, I say, how are you? I'm from England. And my dad had a Liverpool accent, like, you know, great, love it, wonderful. He would say the word squirrel, squiddle. And I'd go, hold on, there's not that many L's in that word. Squiddle, kookbook, squiddle. And, you know, Michael Caine was one of the first people with a working class regional accent to be in the movies. Sean Connery was just British cool. Just, he's British. We're so happy he's, you know what I mean? And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you're endowed with, you know?
So let me play a scene from Austin Powers, and this is from the first Austin Powers film. And Austin Powers is on the trail of Dr. Evil, and he's with a fellow spy, a beautiful spy, of course, played by Elizabeth Hurley. Mm-hmm. And they're pretending to be husband and wife so that they could check into the hotel together, and here they are having just checked into their room.
So, which side of the bed do you want?
You're sleeping on the sofa, Mr. Powers. In fact, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that the only reason we're sharing a room is to keep up the context that we're a married couple on vacation.
Right. Shall we shag now or shall we shag later? How do you like to do it? Do you like to wash up first? You know, top and tails, whore's bath. Personally, before I'm on the job, I like to give my undercarriage a bit of a how's your father.
That's so funny. Mike Myers and Elizabeth Hurley in the first Austin Powers film. And I should say, in that scene, you're wearing an orange jacket, multicolored striped pants, and a blue polka dot shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how did you come up with words like, you know, deciding we were going to use shag a lot and shagadelic?
Me and my brothers are the only people in my gene pool who are not from Liverpool. I have a couple of cousins who are just north of London, but they were all from Liverpool. And they would say things like shag and randy and, you know, the genesis, everything evolves. Everything evolves. The first time I did a character that was like Austin Powers, I did it on stage. And it was a parody of all those British shows where really, really enthusiastic scientists would tell you how everything's made. And so it was a show called This Is How It's Made. And so I would show, like, this is a clothes washer, and here we have the barrel that the clothes go in and a piston that goes up and down. Does that make you horny? Does it? That piston, does it make you randy? To you, is it Eros Manifest? And that's where that crazy riff came from, and it just really made the audience uncomfortable. and that just was that thing of the 60s and everything that was sexualized, eroticized. There was sexy jobs, being a stewardess, sexy countries, Sweden, you know? And just how one day that just didn't happen anymore. And that's really the genesis of Austin Powers, is whatever happened to swingers. I literally was driving home from hockey practice and I heard The Look of Love by Burt Bacharach and went, what happened to swingers?
I like in Mel Brooks's movies, a lot of his movies are based on the premise, like, if Mel Brooks was back in history, what would mm-hmm. history be like? You know, mm-hmm. if Mel Brooks was a romantic lead, what would that be like? Did you feel that way about Austin Powers? If Mike Myers was this kind of like international spy, a man of mystery, what would he be like?
Well, I would be operating from a tremendous amount of low self-esteem and unprocessed wounding. It's funny. When I started going out with girls, it was just right at the end of the sexual revolution. So I watched my older brothers, and I was like, wow, this is great. I can't wait. And then it was like, wah, 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 but not for you. You know, that looks great when you're 11. It's like, wow, I can't wait. You know, that'll be awesome. They were like on the game show and it's a brand new car. I get on the game show and it's a donkey. Wah, wah, wah. So it is a little bit of a fantasy realized. But, you know, the main thing that's interesting, you know, the Austin Powers, the reason, in my opinion, and this is the dramatic thesis, if you will, of a very, very broad and silly comedy, and everything I do is broad and silly. I try and give it an underpinning of something that is on my mind. But ultimately, the delivery system is very broad and silly. But my belief is that the sexual revolution didn't end because of a sexual counter-revolution. I don't think the right had anything to do with it, the moral right or whatever you want to call them. I think what happens is that that kind of swinging is an unsustainable lifestyle. I think when people cheat, it hurts their feelings. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that...
Yes.
I, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think that kind of stuff hurts. There's a hangover. There's an aftertaste. There's a price to be paid.
So were you scarred
so
by...
So true love triumphs over lust is the message of Austin Powers.
So were you scarred by missing the sexual revolution?
I felt a little ripped off, yes. It didn't seem at all fair.
Mike Myers, speaking to Terry Gross earlier this year. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview from earlier this year with Mike Myers, writer and star of The Love Guru. The movie has just come out on DVD.
Now, there was a period when I was sure you were Jewish, even though it turns out you were raised Protestant. But I mm-hmm. think I thought you were Jewish because you did the Linda Richman character so well on
Indeed.
Saturday Night Live. And she was the Jewish woman from New York with the big 80s eyeglasses and the bouffant hair that you keep fluffing with her hands. And her conversation mm-hmm. always had Yiddish words in it, like verklempt yeah. and spilkes. And,
mm-hmm.
So where did that come from?
Well, when I grew up in Toronto, you would hear in culture, like even the Indians in F Troop were like, I'm an Indian, you know. This is Meshuggah, you know.
yeah.
You know, as a comedy fan, you know, everybody, you know, Phil Silvers. See, this is my father was like, people weren't American, they weren't Canadian, they weren't English, they were from Showbiznia. But, you know, Bing Crosby was from Showbiznia.
Right.
And you just hear an accent that is New York and... I'm guessing now New York Jewish, could be New York Italian, it's hard to know. And when I came to New York, I couldn't believe that that accent existed in nature and that it wasn't just a literary convention. And it all came down to hearing somebody say, would you like a coffee? A coffee. And I thought, K-A-U-P-H-Y, coffee. You mean coffee? And it was daughter's dog's coffee, you know, no big whoop. And it's mellifluous, and it's because of comedy culture, it's familiar and it's comforting. The language of Yiddish is, I guess it's onomatopoetic, you know, to say something is drek. Actually, the word Shrek is Yiddish for scare. Ugh, I got such a Shrek. And now that I live in New York and have since 1989, it's the language of my people, I feel. I get very happy when I travel abroad and I hear, you know, dogs, daughter, coffee. And, you know, since I'm 12, pocketbook, online, all of these things that remind me of what is now my home, which is New York City, you know.
What did you love about expressions like verklempt? Like, I can't talk now, I'm getting verklempt.
I'm getting a little verklempt. It sounds like it is. You know, you go into somebody's house and it's schmeck, which means clean. They keep a very schmeck house. Although there's not enough windows, it's a little finster, which is dark. Nishta heina nishta here. That's another one I love.
For neither here nor there.
You know. Yeah. It's nishta heina nishta here. And geg is into hate. Sheket b'fakasha. These are the things. It feels closer to the sentiment. It's
does
it's a very expressive
mean,
language.
Verklempt means I'm getting choked up?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then some stuff I made up, like, Spielkus is real, but Gnechtegesoink is not, you know. He has Spielkus in his Gnechtegesoink. I'm getting a little verklempt when I talk about him. He's in Boca Raton. He's recovering nicely, but he has Spielkus in his Gnechtegesoink.
Now, you were a child performer. I mean, you were in commercials starting when you were 9 or 10. Did you get the kind of training that, like a lot of kids in the 60s, and maybe in the 70s too, were trained as if they were old vaudevillians, you know, like they would need to tap dance and sing and and do comedy and acting. Were you trained to do all of that?
I wasn't. You know, Conan O'Brien, when I first got on the show, because he was a writer on Saturday Night Live, he looked at me and he said, "You're from olden days. You're from yesteryear." And I went, "I guess I am. I don't know. I just recently, PBS had a pledge, and they had the singing and dancing documentary. And I was watching, you know, An American in Paris and Gigi. And I was like, God, I want to make a movie like that. And then I thought, of course, not at that level of skill. But in my own way, I did sort of make movies like that. There is dancing in Austin Powers and in the
There's
Love
a little
Guru.
Singing in the Rain tribute.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, I think I'm old school that way. I think the training I did as an actor as a child ultimately is irrelevant to what I did in my adult years. I think it's night and day. I think, you know, when you're a little kid, it's the isn't it great that he can do that for a little kid? And then once you hit 18, there's no for a little kid, you know, disclaimer attached to it. I loved doing it as a kid. It was very, very interesting. My real training began at Saturday Night Live.
What's the worst thing that happened to you live on Saturday Night Live? The thing that really caught you up short?
On Sprockets, it was Dieter's dance party. And Lauren said, if you can take 2 minutes out of the sketch gets in. And he said this with, the show's at 11:30, he said this at 11:10. So I ran, broadcast news style, to the PAs, and I made cuts. And it went from Dieter's dance party top 10 to Dieter's dance party top 5. And they still hadn't changed the cue cards. And so some dude was behind the cue card guy, sweat, buckets of sweat, changing the cue cards. Because you can never really memorize your lines at Saturday Night Live because they change all the time because of standards and practices and Lauren's notes between dress and air. And I had to stall at one point. I go, number 3, you know, who are you to accuse me or whatever the name of the song was. Number 4, and the dude was furiously writing on the card, Schreibmaschine by the Love People or whatever the name it was. The other thing was when I did Wayne's World, it was a cold opening. It was the day that the Gulf War broke out. It was being changed 33 seconds up into air because we wanted to make sure that if the invasion, the first Gulf War, was going to be horrendous casualties, that we would be sensitive to the people in the armed forces. So anything that we thought might suggest, I don't know, being anything other than appreciative of the men in the armed services, we cut with 33 seconds to go to a live show. So that those are the two moments that were very significant to me. I've also cracked my head a million times backstage.
Really?
My body is mostly, oh, sure. Because I go night blind. You know, it's very, very bright lights. And then you go backstage to make a quick change. And I can't see anything. Literally, they have to, you know, pull me by the hand. I've, like, cut open my hand. My head is mostly scar tissue now.
Have you been bleeding live on the air?
Yes, I have. And then you just have to put the bleeding hand downstage behind your back.
Seriously? Yeah?
Oh, many times. I get very nervous, or not, or it's adrenaline. And sometimes you cut yourself, you don't even know it.
Right.
And I've, like, knocked out teeth. I've got a scar over my right eye. My hand is all cut up. Many, 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 many quick change accidents.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Mike Myers, speaking to Terry Gross last June. The Love Guru is now out on DVD.